This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 14th of July 2010, although it's still the 13th of July back in California, where I'm joined on the line by Rosalind Peterson of CaliforniaSkywatch.com. She has worked as an agricultural technologist for the Mendocino County Department of Agriculture and a crop loss adjuster for the USDA, and currently acts as president of the Agriculture Defense Coalition, which is dedicated to preserving agriculture, water supplies, trees, and pollinators from experimental weather modification and atmospheric testing programs. Ms. Peterson, thank you so much for joining me today on the program.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be on your show today.
Well, let's start by hearing a little bit about your background, as well as the Agriculture Defense Coalition and the details of how, when, and why you came to found California Skywatch.
Well, there's not too much to say except that I was born and raised on a working farm in Northern California. And so agriculture was just my life because we raised tree crops and vegetables and many, many things over the years. It would change from time to time, but we raised walnuts and apple trees and those kinds of things. And so I grew up on a working farm, knowing how to drive a cat tractor, do all kinds of things, pump water from local creeks for irrigation purposes and things like that. So as I got older, I went to work for the Mendocino County Department of Agriculture, and I worked for them for 5 years. And then I went on to work for the United States Department of Agriculture in California in the Farm Service Agency, and also as a certified crop loss adjuster, which means I traveled around many parts of California addressing crop loss issues. And so that was part of my career in a good portion of my life. And then all of a sudden I began to realize in around 2002 that there was something going on that was starting to impact on agriculture and was starting to be different. And so I started to investigate, and the first website I put up was CaliforniaSkywatch.com, and that was in 2002. And then later, some other issues came up about geoengineering, and that's atmospheric manipulation to put up chemicals or particles into the atmosphere, which would, in other words, reduce direct sunlight or other issues. So in response to that and a few other issues about experimental weather modification programs that would negatively impact agriculture, I put up the Agricultural Defense Coalition website in 2006. So both websites are in operation, and the Agricultural Defense Coalition website has almost my entire database, and by the time we get to the end of this month, it will have my entire database on it of research that I've conducted on the subject for the last 8 years.
Very interesting. So from the California Skywatch website, I understand that you had a particularly affecting experience on March 27th of 2002 that got you thinking along these lines and looking more quizzically at what's happening in the sky. Can you tell us a little bit about that incident?
Yes, I was working for Mendocino County Probation Department at that time. And I took a break for lunch, and I ran into a friend of mine who I'd worked for in previous years. And he invited me into his office briefly to ask me what I knew about crop dusting. And I said, well, I said, in our county, they haven't been crop dusting with pesticides or for many, many years. And I said, so I didn't think there was any going on in our county. And he said, well, he said he had received a call, and he was concerned because from his brother, because he said that they were going to be doing something atmospherically in the skies, and he'd been noticing it. And so he took me outside that day, and it happened to be that that day there was these persistent jet contrail plumes all over, jets flying in every direction. And I realized from looking up that there was something wrong. And so initially, that was the day that I started really starting to try and find out what was going on in our skies, and also who would be modifying our cloud cover, and in other words, what the project was for and what was going on. So that started some research, and within a few months, I found that we were having sharp tree declines in many areas of the United States as well as in California, and I began to put the two together and say, I think I know a little bit about why this might be happening. So my research has taken me in that direction as well, and that's why California SkyWatch went online.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the research that you've been conducting these past 8 years and what sorts of things you've uncovered in terms of documentation.
Well, what I've uncovered is that right now, for example, they have what they call geoengineering, which is upper atmospheric modification. And one of the things that's been happening is the U.S. House of Representatives has held three hearings, one in November 5th last year and two this year in February and March, to have some talking about global geoengineering governance, drawing up plans to put up particles and chemicals or do other atmospheric experiments to reduce the amount of direct sunlight reaching the Earth. And this is ostensibly to cool us down. But the type of chemicals and particles that they're talking about putting in the atmosphere are likely to produce acid rains when they come back down, like sulfur. And they're likely to do other damage to the environment. And when you release the amount of direct sunlight reaching the Earth, you start to reduce photosynthesis. And without photosynthesis, all plant life will lose the energy to grow. Crop production will be reduced. Without direct sunlight, you start to have a lack of vitamin D and the associated health effects. And so I began to be concerned that reducing the amount of direct sunlight reaching the Earth might not be what we want to do, and that it may not cool us down. And that many of the scientists who were recommending this course of action said, well, we don't know what the consequences are, but we would like to do the testing anyway, so that we can be prepared in an emergency or such to put the chemicals up or whatever we need to do to keep us cooler, to combat global warming. And so I took exception to this because I found out through my research that one of the causes of global warming we could take care of by reducing our pollutants and some of the impacts of aviation. And we could do it very easily and without, in other words, having to resort to things that would harm the environment.
So your research tends to indicate that the persistent jet contrails are along the lines of geoengineering in terms of global warming or preventing global warming.
Yes. What I don't think that they're there to prevent global warming. Persistent jet contrails are actually causing global warming, because the NASA studies and the Stanford studies and some others, and there's quite a number of them, all show that aviation causes global warming. It exacerbates it, and it also changes the climate. And it's responsible for 20% of the warming over Alaska and the Arctic, and they know that it's directly aviation produced. And what happens is, when jets fly and they leave these contrails that persist, besides toxic jet fuel emissions, you have this man-made cloud that is produced. One man-made cloud can last up to 20 hours. It can cover 4,000 kilometers with either man-made clouds or white haze of some kind. And what it does when it produces these man-made clouds, it's the combustion process releases water vapor into the atmosphere. Water vapor is a greenhouse gas. So therefore, when you see these man-made clouds that change our climate, they're also exacerbating global warming. And one of the things that we could do is to stop the jets from flying at heights that produce these man-made clouds. So there are things that we can do almost immediately which would start to reduce the problem. The other thing about man-made clouds, according to NASA studies, is that they're a little different than natural clouds in that they hold in and trap more heat. And when they hold in and they trap more heat, they're more humid, you get this heat trap that traps all of the other pollutants, greenhouse gases and other pollutants. So you actually keep the heat from escaping, both during the night and the day. And in trapping the heat, you warm the earth up. And you concentrate these other pollutants as well. So part of the thing about geoengineering is that we already have this geoengineering experiment, and whenever you see these jets producing the man-made clouds, we're already geoengineering the atmosphere. And so one of the things we should be doing, instead of adding more particles and chemicals to that toxic mix that we already have, we should be finding ways to have the jets run cleaner. We should have them fly at heights where they don't leave trails that persist. And we should start to move in that direction very quickly.
Well, that's right. So, but just to be clear, the advocates of geoengineering would say that this is designed to try to lower temperature, but it's in fact raising temperature.
When you reduce the amount of direct sunlight and you're putting particles and chemicals, they're going to come down. And that reducing sunlight, the thing about the man-made clouds that have been produced is that where we have been running tests and solar panel production goes down. So where you might be getting solar panel production at 90%, in other words, where it's delivering power, when you cover over the skies with these man-made clouds, you reduce the amount of solar power, and you're already reducing the amount of sunlight reaching the earth because your panels aren't getting enough direct sunlight, and so they'll drop how much power they produce. So we do know already that with the man-made clouds from the jets, we're reducing the amount of sunlight reaching the earth, and it's still warming us up. And that's what all these NASA studies and other studies show us. So therefore, to say that we're going to put up more particles without reducing the problem here, you're just going to make things worse. And that reducing the amount of sunlight by the artificial cloud cover is not working.
All right, so what can you tell us about the composition of these trails from your research?
Persistent jet contrails from my research are composed of highly toxic jet fuel emissions, which cause agricultural damage, human health problems like asthma. The EPA reports on subsonic jet fuel emissions is quite clear that there's carcinogens in them, that jet fuel is probably, I would judge from their reports, much more toxic than automobile exhaust, and that they release soot and other particles. So the plume, even though it looks light, is loaded with jet fuel emissions that are highly polluting. The second thing is that when you see that trail, the combustion process of a jet engine releases water vapor. And so what happens is you get this greenhouse gas that mixes in with this, and you can have some ice crystals in it or not, depending. But what happens is that this is a highly toxic mix, and its impact on agriculture, human health, all these things is quite high.
Well, of course, you're familiar with the idea that there was a fundamental change in jet contrails between the mid-1990s and late 1990s, and we've seen reports of things like aluminum oxide and barium showing up in tests related to what may or may not be in these trails. What do you say about those reports?
We clearly are having spikes in California. I know because I've gone to the California State Department of Health, and they are the repository of every single drinking water test by every public water source in the state of California dating back to the 1970s. Anyone can get the data free by just requesting it from them, so it's not like a secret. But we went through and we looked at all the data going back from the earliest records all the way up to current records, and we found unusual spiking in barium, aluminum, manganese, magnesium, strontium, boron, and some other chemicals. So we are seeing spikes in those chemicals, and we're seeing direct pH increases in the soil from having aluminum in the soil. We're seeing aluminum in the whales. So a lot of tests are being conducted in the atmosphere using these chemicals. Now, I can't directly relate them to the jets. However, I can directly relate the chemical releases to when we send up rockets. NASA and the U.S. Air Force send up rockets or the space shuttle, and they have these canisters attached. And at different heights in the atmosphere, they release these canisters. And when they're heated, they create an explosion. And they're loaded with trimethyl aluminum or barium and strontium and sulfur hexafluoride and a lot of these greenhouse gases and other chemicals. And so this type of testing has been ongoing for many, many years, probably going on 30 years at this point. So I do have the evidence and the documents and the research and the studies from those particular tests that are in many cases ongoing. And I have the documents from last year when the NASA and the U.S. Navy sent up a rocket over the eastern seaboard of the United States, and they created an aluminum oxide dust cloud. And they were doing research about putting up this cloud of dust, and eventually the aluminum oxide will come down. And then they're talking about doing additional tests, putting up more aluminum oxide and other tests into the atmosphere. So we're chemically beginning to put more and more chemicals into the atmosphere to conduct tests. And the problem is that these chemicals are going to come down. They're going to get into our water supply. They're going to get into our soils. They're going to get into the food we eat. They already are showing high levels of aluminum that can't be explained worldwide in whales tests that they have done. And so part of it is that we have been doing these experiments. So where I can't relate the aluminum, for example, to anything that the jets are doing, except for the military uses aluminum-coated fiberglass. And aluminum-coated fiberglass, or chaff, is a particulate that they dump by the ton, not only here in the United States, but around the world, for radar disruption and military testing. And they can also put chaff in the air, and then from chaff, they can watch the front move across the United States by seeing its reflection on the radar screen. So we do know that the jets and the military are releasing these type of particulates, which are not good for human health as well. But the rest of these chemicals that are being put up are being put up by rockets or the space shuttle. And so that testing has been going on for some time.
Well, given that the government is testing with these types of toxic chemicals, aluminum oxide and barium and others, what recourse do Americans have against this type of testing, given that obviously this will eventually fall to Earth and will cause unknown health hazards?
At the moment, there is nothing. In the United States, anyone can modify the weather. There's an NMOD treaty that was signed in 1978 that bans certain types of experimental weather modification in war and for some other purposes, and we appear to be violating that treaty, which was ratified by the U.S. Senate as well. So it's a treaty that's now currently in force. And the weather modification programs that are done here, that no one I can take and I can hire a plane and I can modify the weather anywhere without consent, without public notification. I can just go and hire somebody and just do it. And so the problem with weather modification and this atmospheric testing is that there is no one to protect public health. At some point, the military, universities, government agencies all decided that they could just do this kind of testing, and since there were no laws against it, they have continued to escalate and do more and more of this type of testing, which I think is, I think the environmental consequences, not only in the United States but elsewhere, would be impacted by this type of testing.
Well, surely if you were to go and rent a crop duster and start spraying sulfuric acid on the people below or something in the name of weather modification, I mean, there would be some ability to actually stop that from happening. But if someone sprays aluminum or barium and says that it's in the name of environmental modification, that's okay. It seems there must be some agency at some point that would be responsible for something like that.
Well, if you're using an herbicide or a pesticide, you have to register with the United States Department of Agriculture, and there's some things you need to do. But if you're talking about taking a big jet and going up atmospherically, or using chemicals or any type of method to modify the weather, there is not.
All right, please go ahead.
Well, it's a slim line, but there's this belief that if the military wants to do it, or if a university or some experiment wants to go on and they want to release some chemicals, there's no laws to cover it. And so we're working to see if we can get laws in the long term that will start to cover this. But the public has been so unaware of any of these programs that it's only now with research and a lot of work and effort that we have dug out the information to find out what was going on, because we didn't know, and the American public was essentially kept in the dark.
Well, exactly. So is it your contention that commercial jetliners are part of a coordinated program that's involved in it, environmental modification on a knowing basis, that they're consciously involved in that, or is there something else going on?
Most of the jets that we see that leave persistent contrails in our area, here in Northern California and in other states that we see, most of them look to be military because they fly in all directions. They travel in circles. They're not usually on a straight line pattern that an airline would take. Airliners do leave contrails, but the type and the scope of the contrails they leave is quite different than the impact of military and other private airplanes that fly over us all the time out of the flight path of normal commercial airlines, and they have instituted military operations areas in many places over the United States where commercial airliners can't fly. And these jets are in those areas all the time.
Interesting, but particularly disturbing is the fact that, of course, this is not just taking place in the United States, and I can speak from personal experience here in Japan, seeing persistent jet contrails being laid here that turn into cloud cover over the course of a few hours, and having seen that on several occasions, and of course we have photographic and videographic evidence of this from all over the world, so that would seem to indicate something of a much, much grander scale than simply the United States government.
It does. And I can tell you that from pictures and photographs and talking to people around the world, which I've done for many years, Italy is one of the worst countries I've ever seen, picture-wise, and also from the writings and the agricultural crop production problems and things there. But I have seen pictures and photographs of people who have traveled to other countries, and all of the NATO countries appear to be involved, and our government appears to be involved in some sort of worldwide project, because they're showing up everywhere. And it's very rare to find a country that isn't either covered in man-made clouds or where you see the jets producing those trails. If commercial airlines are involved, they may be paid to be involved, but they would not be deviating out of their flight paths most of the time because of the cost of fuel and their on-time schedules. The jets we see roving around appear to have unlimited fuel, unlimited time. They can run for hours and hours and be refueled and keep on going. And you don't see that with commercial airplanes. So the difference in the patterns is quite different.
Well, I personally find that a little bit disturbing that there is some sort of, that there's at least the possibility of some coordinated intergovernmental effort here. So I guess, is there anything that you've come across in the documentary record that would indicate perhaps the scale, the scope, or the nature of what's going on?
It's very hard to find information about what these military jets are doing because the information has been so heavily classified, and the military is really engaged in saying that everything is safe and everything is normal, and it's very hard to find any coordinated or any type of information which spells out anything that they are spraying or what the jets are doing. There's speculation all the time, but in 8 years of research, I haven't been able to uncover it, and I'd love to break that story. However, the amount of cloud cover that these jets produce all of the time and the amount of warming that aviation produces, and there's a book I recommend called Aviation and the Global Atmosphere. It's still in print, and it's a book by the IPCC, and it goes into all of the negative impacts of aviation on the environment, and it's pretty heavy, including global warming. And one of the things I think that has happened, and this I'm going to just speculate for you, it's probably the one of the few times I'll speculate, but one of my speculations is that there are certain areas in the world that corporations want to get to, and they've been frozen for many years. And one of the ways that it has been understood since the late 1980s is that they could produce man-made clouds to trap in the heat because of the water vapor content, and they could warm up areas of the Arctic, they could warm up Alaska, and so that multinational corporations could get in and exploit the natural resources there. And so one of the things that I think, either directly or caused, and have been talked about by scientists for a long time, is that they could create this warming process. And so I look at this as that this could be the reason that we're warming, is because it's more of a deliberate effort, and that our scientists do know that the jets are causing warming, Stanford University studies, all of it. And so why wouldn't they, if there's warming as a problem, then why wouldn't they be backing off with this man-made cloud cover, which they seem to be increasing along with the white haze? So I think it's to get into certain areas and exploit them, and for either military purposes or for natural resources in those areas they can't get to now.
Very interesting. Well, certainly if the warming could be exploited for monetary gain, I'm sure it probably would be at some point. But again, that is speculation. So returning to what we can document, tell us a little bit more about your websites and what people can find there.
The CaliforniaSkyWatch.com website, in general, talks about different information. It talks about honeybee decline. It talks about the jets. It talks about the U.S. Navy 5-year warfare testing program that the Navy is initiating in the Atlantic, in the Pacific, and in the Gulf of Mexico. And that most of the programs started or were initiated in 2007 or 2008. And that the Marianas Islands, the Hawaiian Islands, Okinawa, there's a lot of areas where undersea warfare testing is going on. They're using toxic chemicals, bomb blasts, and this information is on the California Skywatch site, along with honeybees and legislation about weather modification programs in the United States. The other website is not a general website. It is a hard-hitting website which includes almost my entire database of research going back to 2002, although some documents are older because they show the history of some events going on. And you would find documents on honeybee decline, weather modification programs. You'll find everything I know on geoengineering programs. U.S. Government hearings on those programs, testimony, plans, schemes, everything. There's a section on upper atmospheric testing. You will find legislation and information about current legislation on the site itself. You'll find information about HAARP, agriculture. There's the list is quite extensive, and if you go to the agriculturedefensecoalition.org, and you either click on the items at the top of the page, or you can go to the sitemap, and there's an alphabetical listing, and we're going to complete about 25,000 documents on this site, and studies and other information by the end of this month. We have about 18,000 items up right now.
Excellent. Well, certainly quite a bit of bedtime reading for the listeners out there. Well, Rosalind Peterson, is there anything else that you'd like to say or any final thoughts that you'd like to leave the listeners with on this subject?
Yes, I would. When you see jets producing man-made clouds, they are exacerbating global warming. They're changing the climate. They're having an impact on agriculture. They're having an impact on human health because we're beginning to see huge increases in lack of vitamin D from all this reduction of direct sunlight reaching the earth. So anytime that anyone says that they want to remove the direct sunlight from reaching the earth, you're going to have a lack of photosynthesis. You're going to have increased health effects from lack of vitamin D. And I put a sunlight section on my website, and you can see the health effects from that we're already experiencing from lack of direct sunlight and more cloudiness in our skies. So the contrails are not benign, and they do have impacts. The other issue is that apparently the United States government and England are going to come out with global geoengineering governance, where they want to initiate putting chemicals and particles in our skies or in our oceans to combat global warming. And we don't need to do that because the U.S. Senate on June 10th of this year upheld the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States. They upheld the right to reduce and regulate greenhouse gases and other pollutants. And so they can do that immediately. And so we are leading the world right now in beginning to put in those regulations into place and to reduce greenhouse gases. So we don't need to be putting more particles and chemicals which will cause acid rain. And we don't need global geoengineering governance where this is a worldwide program. This will not be just in the United States. So we have to be aware of what chemicals, what particles, what schemes they have, none of which they can guarantee won't have negative consequences for all of us. So instead of reducing our pollutants, like the U.S. Senate voted for the EPA to do on June 10th, we don't need to add more pollutants into the atmosphere. In other words, to cool us down, because we can start to do that by the reductions that we're going to be making here. So I'm concerned that worldwide we could have tremendous impacts from sulfur, for example, and the acid rains caused by putting sulfur in the atmosphere to cool us, and we could have a loss of crop production. So I want everyone to be aware everywhere that some of the things that the United States is going to implement is going to be on a worldwide basis, and that all countries should take an interest in this, and all people, because we will suffer the consequences of these uncontrolled and unregulated experiments.
Well, that's exactly right. And as I say, from personal experience, I can inform the listeners that this definitely is happening in Japan as well. And as we can see from the internet and lots of information collected from many people around the world, that this is happening in many places. So this is a very important issue for people to be looking into, and I would direct them to CaliforniaSkyWatch.com and AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org to start looking into it. Rosalind Peterson, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today.
And thank you very much for having me on your show today. It was an honor.